Hello and welcome to MedPod, the official CPD podcast for Maiden Early Trust staff by Maiden Early Trust staff. In each episode, we are joined by a member of Trust staff to share their area of expertise, interest or research in the hope that it will inspire our listeners to try out something new in their own practice. I'm Chloe Bateman and I will be your host for this episode of MedPod. So I'm really excited today to be joined by Nicola Reynolds, who is teacher of French and German at Maiden Early School. She's also the head of Attenborough House here as well. She has 8 years experience of mentoring, which is going to be our topic for today's episode. So mentoring for the initial teacher training programmes is a really hot topic at the moment, and also in society more widely due to challenges that are being faced within initial teacher training, for example, recruitment onto the courses, keeping people in the courses, and then obviously retaining people in the profession afterwards. So I think this is a really topical and really timely episode to be coming out at this time of year. So you've had 8 years of experience of mentoring, which is enormous, including one Absolutely. Year I understand you had four mentees at once.
Yes, I was I was lucky, I think, to have that breadth of experience last year. Four really lovely people, but very different challenges.
Yeah, amazing. And might be some sort of national record potentially there with numbers.
I'll be honest, I hope not.
And also, you're a certified expert in this, we might say, if that doesn't put too much pressure on you, because you did actually receive the James Furlong Award for Mentoring from Reading University last year in recognition of your efforts. And that's something I understand that was actually nominated by the mentees.
It was really a shock to be nominated at all by the mentees. Going back to your point about having four people, they said they had never had four people nominate one person previously. So that was really delightful.
Brilliant. Yeah. So I think we can say you're quite qualified to speak on this today, which is great news for us. So I was just wondering if you could tell us a bit about your career journey so far before we start to get into how you got into mentoring. And then I think the key thing for everyone here is going to be the tips that you have to offer us. So we're actually going to go through a number of different scenarios and kind of look at how you might address them as a mentor, because it's such an important role, isn't it, for you know, everybody within that programme. The mentor kind of holds it together, I would say. So I think it's going to be great to hear your top tips, you know, maybe potential pitfalls that people might come across. And also, what have you gained personally from mentoring yourself? Because I think sometimes we forget about that side of it, that this is actually really important for professional development of teachers, as well as, of course, developing the trainees. So that's what we've got in store for you today. If we go back to your career journey, how did you get to this point?
Sure. So I did an undergraduate degree in French and German at the University of Reading, and then I took my PGC at King's College London. I had the very bizarre experience of two identical placements of Catholic girls' schools twice, which was really, really bizarre, which I'll have to be upfront, did not set me up for success going into a mixed-sex comprehensive school as my very first school. But the things that I learned from that really helped me demonstrate how to differentiate and how to know how best to stretch and challenge different students, and made me really appreciate that in order to be an effective mentor, you have to have had a variety of experiences. Mm. And that was something that I felt I didn't really have when I was an NQT, as it was called at the time, by ECTs now. The most important thing that I really took out of my, obviously, becoming a newly qualified teacher was actually really developing those relationships with students and with other members of staff, and being able to know how well I can rely on all of them for their different expertise. And that's something that I like to think I continue today. I'd really try to reach out to different members of staff so that I know I can lean on them for different things, essentially.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for that. So how was it that you got into mentoring them for the PGC? What kind of drew you into it?
Well, it's funny that you use the phrase drew into. It was pretty much fell into as the member of staff who was full-time and didn't have a TLR at my first school. My third year, I was told, oh, well, we think you could do with some more responsibility. So could you go to this mid-Essex ITT training and mentor this student? And I said, I haven't got a lot of experience myself. It's only my third year. And they're sort of like, oh, yeah, you'll be fine. And to be fair, we have been fine. We've just run with what we've got. And I've really taken advantage of the training offered by mid-Essex, as where I used to work, and Reading University's ITT training. They really make it possible for you to share your knowledge with the students, even if you think, oh, not so good on that one myself, but they give you the tools to help them help themselves or to lean on other members of staff, as I mentioned in the previous introduction. It's something that I've really sought out. Once I moved from Essex to Reading, I really specifically looked for a teaching school. Mm. So seeing that Maiden Early Trust is a big part of teaching school hub Berkshire, It's something that I really wanted to maintain and keep going, partly because it improves my own practice, as you've already alluded to, Chloe, and also because seeing people develop is the same thing that I enjoy about being a secondary school teacher. Yeah. It's not just about tick box, get it done. It is about seeing people grow from that very first micro teach, where very often you get a deer in a headlights look. And then by the time you get to February or June, people look excited to be there and they're really keen to share what they've developed.
Mm. I think that's a really nice point actually about how closely aligned it is with our core values as teachers of students. I think sometimes people see them as quite separate, but I agree with you. I've only mentored for 1 year, but I felt exactly the same as what you've described, definitely. So what does being a mentor involve then in terms of like the day-to-day, week-by-week kind of practicalities of it? What do you know that you do as a mentor that kind of sets it apart from just being a supportive member of staff, like in a department to that new person?
Well, on paper, it's an hour a week where you have your written record of meeting and progress with the trainee teacher. In reality, if you're able to give them a bit more, you find that they give back tenfold. Mm. That could be as simple as sitting with them and looking at lessons, having a look at their written feedback from other members of staff in the department. Just as an example, my current trainee is a Spanish trainee. I don't speak Spanish, so I don't see her teach very often, but we touch base regularly to make sure that she feels she's progressing and feels supported. So ultimately, you could do the bare minimum and complete the reports and say, tick, 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 done. But I feel that being able to guide them within their role and future responsibilities is something that has really taken off for me. Mm. A student who I had 2 years ago, she's now the head of French in a school up in Basingstoke.
Wow.
In 1 year, she's become the head of department because she felt she had enough leadership experience here within the trust, which is absolutely amazing. I don't think I had that confidence when I was in my second year of teaching, but she's done absolutely brilliantly. Ultimately, the thing that will give the students and yourself the most on a day-to-day basis is just feeling confident to have those conversations. In terms of a weekly commitment, I would struggle to put it into figures how long I spend other than my hour of ROT meeting.
Yeah.
I would say it's lots of 5 minutes of, can I just talk to you about this? How's this going? Have you talked to this person? Do you need me to send an email to this person? Just being able to be that sort of prompting voice to say, have you considered this? Have you considered that? Because motivated student teachers have their own goals and aspirations, and they do the course because it's something that they are very excited about. Certainly at this stage in the year, they haven't decided, I can't handle this. Mm. They are very keen to try everything out. So this is the time to sort of give them options and say, have you seen this person be a mentor? Have you seen this member of the management team? Have you seen this member of the support team? And so on. Across the year, it's a commitment to them personally, I feel. It's a bit like servant leadership for those people who are familiar with that term.
Yeah.
Being able to, if you're working for them, you're really working for yourself and helping everyone improve.
Yeah, lovely. I think that's an important point about that, about the fact that it can be just those ad hoc conversations, which they can be as impactful as that hour where you're sitting going through the week, because it's just sort of being that person, isn't it, that's there at that right moment in time to say, you know, what about this, what about that, definitely. So why is it so important to get mentoring right then for ITT students? Because I think we can probably all think of examples in our careers, whether it's in teaching or not, where maybe we feel that we've been coached and mentored really, really, really well, and it's been impactful to us. But potentially also people could think of examples where that hasn't been the case, and that can be as impactful, obviously in a much more kind of damaging way. So why is it important to get it right at that moment in time when they are beginning their journey into the profession?
Well, certainly the thing that will have the biggest impact is treating the mentee like a bother. That is the thing that will immediately make them think, this isn't right for me. And as we were saying a few minutes ago, it is giving them a couple of minutes of your time, regularly, irregularly, just checking in, a smile, perhaps a text if you're the kind of person who texts with your mentees, and just to let them know that you're thinking of them and that you know what they're going through. Particularly those students who are following a more academic track, for example, PGCE with QTS, so that you're aware, oh yes, you've got that very big assignment coming up. Let's check in with how your progress is going. Do you need to do that marking and the assignment this week? Is that feasible? because with the best will in the world, they don't have a frame of reference for how long these things are going to take them. So that's something that really helps. And in terms of how much of an impact a supportive mentor has, I can think of three mentees I've had in the last 8 years who would not have finished the course, but for having someone say, hang on a minute, we need to change tack here. And you can do it. It's just that this external thing is happening, or this class isn't right for you, or this piece of evidence isn't there. How are we going to fix it? I don't want to parentify mentoring, because it can feel that way, but it shouldn't. The mentee or the ITT student also needs to take responsibility for, here's my weakness, this is the thing I need to focus on. But it should be a collaborative conversation. You as the mentor should help them reach that point.
I think that's a really key word that's kind of coming out of what you're saying, and I'm sure you'll be picking up on it further as well, that idea of it being, it's a collaborative journey, isn't it, through the process of completing that year, and, you know, potentially beyond that as well. Yeah, definitely. I think that's such an important element of this. So we thought it would be quite helpful, didn't we, when we were talking about this before, to actually kind of put this into practice with a couple of, like, potentially typical examples that people might have with mentees. And obviously we'll be kept totally anonymous completely absolutely confidential in that regard. So I think one example that people may have with mentees potentially is where the trainee may be struggling to meet the professional standards that they need to meet to pass through the course. So that's obviously quite a difficult situation for both the mentor and the mentee. What would you do in that kind of situation?
So from my perspective, there's two approaches. The first is, this person is really struggling and needs a short, sharp shock to say, if this doesn't change, the perception of you is going to continue to be very negative. And we have had an instance of that with a trainee who had taken on a second job in the evening to pay for part of the fees, which was very short-sighted given the challenging nature of the course. So she came to work late every day because she was tired from her evening job. Once we'd established that's what the question was, and that there was a need for a bursary, we got the university involved, we got a hardship fund thing put in place, obviously that then resolved itself. But in terms of other professional standards, for example, appearance, timeliness and so on, you do have to just have those really difficult conversations. And I would say to you, don't hesitate to involve the initial teacher training coordinator. That is what they are either paid for or given additional time in order to support you with. Because those conversations, whilst they're very painful, often have the biggest impact. Returning to my experience in mid-ethics, I had to speak to one of my mentees about how it seemed he had a hygiene problem, which was honestly one of the most difficult conversations I've ever had in my life. As it turned out, the washing machine was broken, and once it was fixed, there was no problem ever again. But having the conversation meant something could change. If nothing is ever challenged, then you simply won't have any improvements. I think it's very important not to tiptoe around these types of issues, especially if you think there is a problem related to their academic work as well. In the same way, would you be satisfied if you were marking literacy work and it just hadn't been done for 5 days? Well, I don't think that would be acceptable. And you wouldn't hesitate to have that conversation. So the same needs to be had for conversations about standard 8 for professional standards.
Yeah, definitely. I think the whole point that you're making there about some of these conversations can be really difficult is a really valid one. And you're so right. We have to approach them in a really, you know, obviously very, very sensitive, but it has to be direct. Otherwise, if you don't name that problem for someone that's new to a profession particularly, it can seem potentially like it's not clear what needs to be done to be the teachers that they can see around them. But of course, if you make that explicit through the language that you use, then you are helping them, even if they don't maybe feel like it at that particular moment in time, for sure. We also have on the other end of the spectrum, obviously, trainees who are really exceeding the standards. And I think that can also be a challenge, can't it? Because you sort of maybe have an image before you start mentoring of like, this is what trainees are like. But as soon as you meet a few trainees, you sort of realise, don't you, that it's just such a diverse...
The spectrum is huge.
Yeah, absolutely. So what about the other end there, where you've got people that they seem to have picked up really quickly, they've got a lot of things right, and you want to push them? What sort of methods have you used previously to do that?
So this goes back to my leaning on more senior colleagues who have different roles and responsibilities. I've suggested, go and speak to the head of RP. They're really good at this thing. Go and speak to this primary school person and talk about doing some liaison work. Have you thought about doing a house competition? Have you thought about running a club? have you, and I've tried to, rather than give them deeper responsibilities, it sounds a little bit shallow, more experience of areas of responsibility, yeah, for which you are not currently accountable, but you've got an idea about what it is. What does it mean to be the pupil premium champion? Mm. What does it mean to work with the students with EAL? What does it mean to work in, just to use a maiden early example, what does it mean to work in the Indigo College? Mm. What does that look like? And that kind of thing is going back to my example of the student I had who is now the head of French. If she had not had a look at what different responsibilities that actually means beyond, okay, today we need to talk about the future tense of French, she would not have had the confidence to apply that and see how she could make that happen in the future.
Yeah.
A really key conversation, I think, to have with student trainees is, no matter how old or experienced they are of work or of teaching or education in general, is what do you think you'll be doing in 5 years' time when you finish the course? I think you'd find that question really insightful. Imagine if I asked my colleagues the same question, they would also have very different answers to what I expect. But several trainees I've had have said, I want to be head of department.
Yeah.
I want to be a head of year. And I think, okay, well, we can't make that happen right now, but we can certainly explore what that actually means. Mm. Because your perception of it as a student is, oh yeah, you rock up at 9 and finish at 3. Way. But of course, that's not the case, as we all know. But it's certainly something that I think is useful. That, what's the phrase? Exposure to different categories, I think, is really useful.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I think that it's sort of that being aspirational and being holistic. I think actually that's something, when I personally was a trainee myself, I found it quite hard to get a sense of that array of different things that were going on in the school that weren't just in my classroom. Mm. And I actually think it's very empowering and very enlightening to actually see that you're not the only person in the world.
Absolutely.
Doing what you're doing.
100%.
And actually, there's so many options out there. And I think, you know, just to bring myself into it again, if that's okay.
Yeah, of course.
I think when I started to realise that, that was what made me really fall in love with teaching as a profession, because just being in the classroom doing my subject all day wasn't something that I could see myself doing for the rest
for the
of my
years.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah. But when you add all these other elements in, that to be exposed to that at a very young, kind of early point in your career, I think, as you're saying, is really impactful, because we want to keep people in the profession ultimately.
100%.
And if people can see those routes and pathways into different outcomes that they might want, and they can see it as that career journey, if we can sow those seeds really early on, I think that's a really important way of doing it, definitely.
And if any of you are listening are ECTs, this is the chance to get those kinds of training things on your ECT plan. If you say, oh, in 5 years' time, I'd like to be head of department, you can say, I want to go on a course about ALPS.
Yeah.
I want to go on a course about bridging the gap. I want to go on a course about managing people. I want to go on a course about, and so, you know, so on. Get it in your plan so that the school is essentially obliged to help you find time to do those things. And that is, again, extremely valuable. Ask to go on courses, just to refer to the trust again, not that the trust is the be all and end all, but that we have a catalogue of professional development courses 100%. That you can go on. And I imagine that's true of many trusts within the country.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of making time to work on your professional skills.
Yeah.
We'll come back to how mentoring develops your professional skills, I imagine, in a couple of questions time.
Yeah.
But that is something that you don't, in the same as we say to the children, you don't ever really stop learning.
Yeah.
You just specialise in certain areas, we broaden your knowledge of the things you do in your classroom day to day. And I feel that mentoring obviously really complements that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we've got like ECT year twos here in the trust more widely who are doing courses about becoming a pastoral leader.
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic that there's that aspiration now, I think, at an early point in the career. And, you know, mentoring is obviously something that plays into that as well. So
absolutely.
I think hopefully if people are listening to this thinking that they want to get involved with it, this is going to maybe be a bit of a prompt to open up those conversations for the future. The final scenario that we spoke about was to do with people that have maybe a need for some support outside of the classroom. I feel like you've alluded to this slightly, because it's obvious that you take a very holistic approach to mentoring. It's not just, you know, what's going on in the classroom today. You see that wider person there. So if you feel like someone does need support with something that doesn't necessarily relate to their teaching, but it's maybe having an impact upon them when they're at work, how do you approach that? Because I imagine that might be one of the most difficult areas to approach.
Often it's about being open with the trainee or the mentee, and them being open with you. It's definitely a relationship question. I find that being upfront about when I myself am having difficulties, for example, you know, it's silly season, marking all the exams, whatever is happening, I'd like to be an open book.
Yes.
And in response, I have found that mentees treat me in the same way, which obviously makes broaching those conversations much easier.
Yeah.
If you have a mentee who is more of a closed book, I tend to point to evidence within the lesson feedback and say, often you would be more open and positive with these students' comments, but here I've noted you were very no and you've shut this answer down. And that can be a way in to say, is something more going on here? Again, it relies on the mentee being open with you, but there is generally a professional way in as well as a sort of personal relationship way. The way I would refer to this is, if the ITT mentee is following a course of study through a university, I would refer them back to the university and say, what support can you put in place? For example, the University of Reading has various student services, including counselling and so on, that can be provided. Students who follow a direct training route within the trust have access to Perk Box, which is which has a counselling service. You can refer them to different organisations, for example, if they're needing grief counselling or there's something happening medically and so on.
Yeah.
In general, I have found that in order to be a successful and effective teacher, you have to be open with someone at some point.
Yeah, for sure.
Even if that's not your mentee or your line manager, someone needs to know what's going on in your life so that someone can give you support.
Mm-hmm.
You may not agree with me, and that's absolutely fine. But I think if you let someone in, people are ready to help you.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's just important for life as well, isn't it, really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, I think it's really obvious that you care so much about these mentees, and that's probably a big part of why they've been so successful, because I think just having somebody there who you can go to with anything and you know it's going to be met with, you know, support rather than any judgment, I think is such an important thing at any point, but particularly when you're learning something. I think at the beginning of learning something, you're very vulnerable because everything is new. So to have someone like you there, it must be fantastic for them.
I'm very flattered that you think so highly of me. I just try not to be like my driving instructor. Drive on.
Yeah.
Drive on.
So I think this has come through anyway, to quite a lot of a great extent, actually. But what do you feel that you've gained, you know, personally, professionally, from your involvement with mentoring over this 8-year period?
The top three things that I've gained professionally are I've been able to experiment using the trainees. The trainees approach problems in different ways to me, and there isn't a right answer. So it's good to see how, with a certain group of students, this approach works really well. Alternatively, this approach is a catastrophe, and we won't do it again.
Yeah.
But they're both reasonable outcomes, because how else would you find your own style?
Yeah.
Particularly for our colleagues who work in primary school, I imagine they have to have different approaches for different subjects. For example, practical skills, you need to do different things compared to when you're doing academic work, compared to doing numeracy hour, and so on. So knowing that you've got those different approaches, which other people have tried out, is really, really helpful. The second thing that I think I've really developed professionally is seeing how my own weaknesses in my practice. I'd like to say I'm quick to identify other people's weaknesses, but that's probably not true. But I certainly see, oh, I've commented on this with this trainee, like I keep talking to the board.
Yeah.
And I notice it in myself now, where I perhaps wouldn't have reflected on it before.
Mm.
So I'm much more self-aware in terms of how I deliver to people. I think, oh, if the trainee were in the back of the room now, what would he or she think? And that also helps me be a more effective teacher. It also makes me consider how I'm laying out worksheets and so on, because of the best practice that I'm hearing about from the trainees, I'm able to ensure that I'm giving the students the best and most up-to-date methods of learning. So, for example, do we need to lay out in a certain font using boxes and so on and so on, just to make it clearer for them, which obviously is a really, really positive help. On a personal note, the things that I've really gained is I feel I can talk to many people about many topics that I previously would have thought were absolutely taboo and completely unapproachable, which is surprisingly helpful. Things that you think would phase you, for example, teaching puberty to 13-year-olds, suddenly isn't a problem anymore, because you've dealt with other things that have so much more of an immediate impact. If you say it in a negative manner and so on, you suddenly think, oh, actually, that thing isn't that important anymore. I don't need to worry about it.
Yeah. I completely echo what you're saying. I mean, as I said, I only mentor for 1 year, but I certainly found that it came at a really good time, because you can become a bit samey in your practice, and you can start to, I think, the further you go away from your training year, whatever form that might take, you can maybe start to become less research informed, I think. So to have that contact with a university or, you know, any training provider it does keep you in check as well in terms of, am I actually up to date with what I'm telling this person in front of me? For sure. I think that's such a good benefit to bring out, because I think that's potentially one maybe people wouldn't necessarily think of straight away with mentoring. So yeah, fantastic. Thank you. Two last things I wanted to ask you. I'm sure with mentoring, you know, around the whole of the world with mentoring, just like with something like coaching, you know, there's going to be times that people get it wrong. Even the best mentor is going to get it wrong sometimes. If you were going to highlight any potential pitfalls you think there could be with this, what would they be? And, you know, how might you try to avoid getting things wrong?
Well, I've narrowed it down to three. I could probably be here all night about 50,000, but I've narrowed it down to three. The first one is doing too much thinking for the trainees.
Yeah.
Particularly in the era that we are in now with shared resources and making sure that students have a start point for lessons, there is a danger that the students don't ever really think, why this activity? Why in this way? Why now?
Yeah.
There's the temptation to just go, oh yeah, it's done.
Yeah.
And don't have to think about it again. They're not thinking about the students in front of them, how to adapt it and so on. That's something that I think can be reinforced with just with a conversation and say,
yeah,
just, you know, going off the cuff can work, but for the best outcomes, we should be thinking about this person, this situation and so on. The second thing is a phrase that I heard on a really good documentary about officers at Sandhurst. Failure is a great teacher all by himself.
Right.
It's not a problem to let people fail. The problem is to let them fail and then not do anything about it.
Yes.
If something goes wrong, don't get up in the middle of the lesson, yell at them and say, what the hell do you think you're doing?
Yeah.
Which has happened.
Yeah.
Let them try and fix it. Have a debrief. Talk about the things that went right first and then the things that went wrong, because they'll be acutely aware that it went wrong.
Yeah.
They will know. They don't need you to tell them, especially not in front of the class, that it went wrong. But they can work it out. They don't need to be mollycoddled.
Yeah.
They just need time and a guiding hand. My final point is, it's not always that helpful to protect trainees or mentees from tough groups.
Yeah.
I'm going to put that in quotes, because one person's bread is another man's butter.
Yeah.
And, you know, but students and mentees and trainee teachers should be exposed to a full variety of groups. Going back to my own experience, that is why going to a comprehensive school was so difficult after two Catholic girls' schools. There's not much challenge in a Catholic girls' school because they're very well behaved, they're all girls, and they work very hard. So in that sense, you're doing the students a disservice.
Yeah.
So it's not give them the hardest classes of everybody's timetables and say good luck. It is, here's how to approach this. These are the characters. What behaviour management strategies are you going to use? Have you talked about Sue Cowley? Have you thought about Bill Rogers? Have you thought about these strategies? And so on, just to demonstrate to them that you can do it, even though it's going to feel difficult. It is possible for you to deliver and get good outcomes from the students.
Yeah, of course. I think it's that realism is really important. Like, we have to be positive and you want them to have a good experience of their placement, but it would be, you're so right, it would be a massive disservice to make it all, you know, sunshine and rainbows for the placement, and then they go into their job and it's not like that at all, because actually what's you know, what's the likely outcome of that? They think that the training didn't prepare them for it.
Indeed.
And they end up leaving the profession
absolutely
thinking that they're not equipped to deal with it, when actually if you build that in a, I think the great thing about the training year is that that kind of challenge can be built in that structured way with the guidance of a mentor there by their side, and that's the way to tackle it. 100%. That's, I think that's really helpful to actually hear that all talk through. I was just going to ask if you've got any, you know, top tips that people can take away. We've had loads from you already, of course, but anything additional?
The first thing I would say is to reach out to the initial teacher training provider early if you have concerns about the trainee, or if the trainee is showing signs of difficulty, like they're coming to work late, they are not completing the expected amount of tasks, or they're not planning enough lessons, or they're not completing the documentation as expected. Reach out and have that conversation, particularly if the initial teacher training provider, in our case the university, is not aware that there's a problem, because the sooner you have those conversations, generally the easier they are to fix.
Yeah, sure.
If you just leave things until 3 weeks to go And suddenly it transpires they won't achieve QTS because they haven't completed their assignments or whatever it is. It's then much, much harder to go back and fix things. The second tip is something that, as a mentor, I think is just generally really valuable, both for myself in terms of reflecting on other people's practice. Who can I go and see if I have a learning walk? We have an open door policy. Who can I go and look at? A list of colleagues who are outstanding at a specific thing. So, for example, I've got a little black book of people who are outstanding at questioning, people who are outstanding at differentiation, people who are outstanding at practical subjects, people who are outstanding at working with boys, and so on and so on.
Yeah.
And I will say to that student or that trainee, I think you should see one of these people a week and you should reflect on it in your ROP.
Yeah, that sounds great.
You should make a really specific thing about what did you get from that lesson. Ask questions about the mentee and take an active interest in what's going on in their lives. Again, just as much for you to feel like you're getting to know your new colleague.
Yeah.
Because for the time that they're with you, they are your colleague. They are someone who is learning from you, but they also bring things to the table to help you. For example, as we were discussing the new research, best methods, best practice, and we can all learn from each other.
Yeah, I think that's really important actually to sort of share that amongst your department as well. That I'm sure you've done that already in your department, but actually making everyone else aware that this person isn't here to take up their time. They can actually offer a great deal. I'm thinking of an absolutely incredible mentee that I have had, who is now teaching, you know, doing amazingly in her history department. She was able to help us with replanning of a unit, and I think that's an amazing thing to be able to say you've done it at such a young point in your career. But it's also amazing for us because we were able to get, you know, cutting edge research that she had done at university. So I do think it's sort of maybe reframing. Certain people maybe don't have a great perception of what it's like having a trainee in the department.
Yes.
Let's switch that and actually look at the positives and see this person as a really valuable colleague that we can all learn from.
Absolutely. So that's actually segues me beautifully into my next. Encourage the trainees to teach something that they've specialised in the university.
Yeah.
So for example, one of my RPTs researched the French Foreign Legion. And they, did a, they did a whole fantastic unit about physical activity, like sports in French, how to, you know, naming different exercises, talking about the different countries that the French Foreign Legion are based in, what the uniform is like. So for those people who don't teach French, those are all the different kinds of talks. Talk about countries, clothes, jobs, and so on. We talk about all these different things. But given a new lens, it was suddenly, for those students, the best thing ever. Mm. And it's because that's what that person did research for their dissertation, which was absolutely brilliant. Depending on the school that you work in, here in Maiden Learning Trust, we have the Gold and Silver Programme, so that's something you might offer as an extracurricular, or it might be something you might include in a series of lessons. And finally, and going back to knowing the whole student teacher, not just, oh yeah, you're Fred from this place, involve the student teacher in whole school activities, whether that's good, bad, or banal.
Yeah.
So have the students come with you to celebration evenings. Come to assemblies, come and see the positive things, go to the whole school detentions, see what appointments are like, what does it mean to give a child a 15 minute, what does it mean to give them an hour, what does it mean for them to be in ALPS, what are all these things? And even if it's the more general things, what is it like doing the administration for the reading programme, what is it like to organise exam entries, how does spreadsheets work? All of this, which to me, as if I take my mental hat off and put my teacher hat on, I just think, you can't really want me to sit and explain this to you. But they're the reality. That is what we live every day.
Sure.
And knowing what the job really is, I think is the fairest way to give people a chance to come in and join us.
Yeah, definitely. I think it goes back again to what we were saying about sustainability within the profession and longevity of people's careers. If people are seeing those pathways, they either know that they like them or they don't like them.
Yeah.
And actually knowing that you don't like a pathway is as helpful as knowing that you do like another one, I think.
Absolutely.
So I think that idea, it comes back to that sense of being very holistic about it, not just in terms of seeing them holistically, but encouraging them to see a school holistically is going to be much more realistic for their perception of teaching in the round than
it's
it is
much more
to be
than
in
the four walls of your classroom.
Precisely, yeah.
You can't just close the door and hope for the best.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly so.
Yes, that was a piece of advice I was given at the end of my PGC. It's okay from September, you can just close the door and no one will bother you. Okay.
I'm not sure that really works, does
it? Completely untrue, but an interesting perspective.
Well, Nicola, honestly, I can't thank you enough. I think that this has been just like packed to the brim with so many little gems and like nuggets of advice. But also, it's not just been like a sort of checklist of advice.
No,
there's been real, there's been real weight, I think, and you've really fleshed out everything. So, you know, I can only thank you not only for all the work that you do on mentoring in this school, because it's clear that it's invaluable, but also for sharing that and preparing to share that with us today. I really hope that some people listening to this feel inspired either to, you know, reflect on their practice as a current mentor, or to maybe get into mentoring themselves, because it clearly has given you a lot, but you've also given back so much as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
No, you're very welcome. And I hope everyone at home enjoyed listening as much as we've enjoyed recording it. You can join us next month to hear John Peck talking about ethical leadership in changing and challenging times. So I look forward to seeing you again then. Thank you, everyone.